Welcome to Industry Misinterpretations, episode 174, with James Robertson, CINCOM Smalltalk product evangelist. This week, I have a recording of a product release talk that I gave in Toronto to the Toronto Smalltalk Users Group on January 26th, 2010. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@cincom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. Here to talk about our latest releases of DigitalWorks Object Studio and WebVelocity. As most of you probably know, Object Studio 8.2 and DigitalWorks 7.7 were just released just before the new year. So I think it was actually formally just before Christmas, if I recall. Although they didn't start shipping to customers until after that, because oddly enough, our people don't really work on Christmas. CINCOM actually shuts down pretty much between Christmas and New Year's every year. It's mandatory vacation for most of us. So, anyway, product shipped, it's out the door, a lot of new stuff in the products, and that's pretty much what I wanted to go over is what's in the product in both of these things. Let's see if I can figure out which one of the buttons I'm supposed to press. That's volume. There we go. So the product lineup. Object Studio. Object Studio is, of course, what we call a businessman's thinking tool. It is the only Vista and Windows 7 certified Smalltalk out there. Those of you who go back in Smalltalk ways remember that many years ago now, Digitalk VSC became Windows 95 logo certified, while Object Studio, in kind of the footsteps of that kind of thinking, is both Vista and Windows 7 certified. So it is certified on those platforms, works flawlessly on those platforms, integrates very nicely with it, gives you all the native stuff on Windows you want. In addition, there's some new stuff that Andreas talked about today at our event downtown, a few blocks from here, actually, at our hotel. And I'll talk a little bit about those, although if you have detailed questions about the modeling or mapping tool, fortunately, one of our lead engineers is here. He can answer those in great depth if you so desire. VisualWorks, it has a lot of new features as well. I can go into more depth on those. WebVelocity, also lots of new stuff there, although that's been out since the summer, so it's not quite as new. You've been able to see that probably over the last few months if you've been following Smalltalk. So a lot of new stuff there, but a lot of that's already been out. So all of these products, the main thing that I want to get across, and this is something that's new for us over the last couple of years actually, all of these products are built on a foundation of VisualWorks. So WebVelocity 1.0, was based on VisualWorks 7.6. The next release will be based on VisualWorks 7.7. Object Studio 8.2, built on top of VisualWorks 7.7. So all of these are hosted on that foundation. What that means to you is that if you're using Object Studio, not only do you get that native Windows integration, but you get access to all of those Windows, all those VisualWorks libraries that you're familiar with. Web services, web integration, network services, all of that stuff that VisualWorks brings to the table is now underneath. It's part of the underpinning of Object Studio. It also gives you a much faster VM. Object Studio's VM traditionally was an interpreted VM, kind of like the Dolphin one. It is now a fully JITted VM because it's using VisualWorks. So big changes there, everything built on that foundation. That gives us an easy way to move everything forward because rather than trying to move two or three balls forward at once, we're now moving one core ball forward and then iterating on top of that in directions that are specific to each product's needs. So we don't have as many individual balls to juggle. Makes our engineering task a little easier. Also makes your task as an end user and developer easier because it means that for you, you get one set of core libraries that are common to all the products. If you write something for VisualWorks, for instance, then you say, you know, I'd really like to have much of this application migrate to the web. You don't need to worry about rewriting most of it. If you want to have it tied very specifically in Windows, again, no need to rewrite most of it. You have most of that stuff already there. So, the objectives for this cycle was basically to kind of shore a bunch of things up. This was there were a lot of new things that came out in this release, but they weren't, most of them weren't big shiny things that would be so obvious. I mean, there are a couple of things. When you open up, how many of you have looked at VisualWorks 7.7 or Object Studio 8.2? And the first thing you probably notice is that there's been something of a facelift to both products. The icons are new, so you notice that it's visually more appealing. But other than that, there doesn't seem to be a lot of flash that's new in the product. That's because an awful lot of the work we did is under the covers. We're building the foundation up so that over the next few releases we can do some of that work and have some of that more obvious stuff come up. So we had to do some spring cleanies of work, fix a bunch of stuff up underneath the hood, and get prepared to build a lot of new functionality. So we improved our development process. We automated a lot of things. Of course, these don't appear to you. But what they do mean, especially that last part, the automated testing, we have for the first time really a whole suite of automated testing that runs at the end of every build cycle. During our weekly engineering meetings, the engineers discuss not only what happened on those tests, why some of them failed, what's new and what's different about those tests. So we're actually examining in an iterative fashion what happens. This is not news to most of you. Many of you have been doing this in your own products for years. Kind of the dirty secret of the small talk vendors is that the vendors are often aren't as clean-handed with this as many of the customers are, but we have changed that so that a lot of this stuff is now new. Unicode Windows VM. You finally get for all the products, you now have Unicode under the hood so that you have better internationalization support for that. We also have a bunch of stuff for wide character support. We have now, how many of you know what the acronym CLDR means? Anybody? Yeah, but you know what wider locale support means, certainly. Support for Asian languages, multiple European languages. If you've been following VisualWorks, one of the things in the past is that VisualWorks supported a relative handful of foreign language locales so that you could get German or you could get Japanese because we had an office in Japan that was doing a lot of work, but you couldn't get Chinese or you couldn't get some of the other Eastern European languages. You couldn't necessarily get Cyrillic. What we've done is we've worked with a library that IBM has been promoting for a long time, and we now have support for hundreds of locales. The big work ahead of us that has not yet been done is left-right languages like Arabic and Hebrew. We have not done that yet. But laying this foundation means that we can go in that direction in a much more easy fashion than would have been the case otherwise. Store. If any of you have ever had the misfortune of looking under the hood of Store, you probably came away whimpering. Store, that's no longer like that. A lot of what was under the bottom of Store in the past was this raw SQL layer that was kind of hard to deal with. We've now replaced that with GLORP, our object relational mapping layer. So that means that it's easier for us to move it forward. It's easier for other people, including ourselves, to build additional tooling on top of it. And primarily what it means for us is that in the past, migrating the underlying schema for the database forward to support new functionality was a very difficult thing for us to do. And it meant that adding new functionality for you, one of the things you've waited for years that's not in this release, I should mention, is configuration management tools. Part of the reason that didn't appear is that moving the schema forward was a really hard thing to do because of that underlying raw SQL layer that made it very difficult to move anything forward. In this release, we spent a lot of time working on what we call STORP, Store on GLORP, and that means that moving that underlying layer forward will now be vastly easier for us because there's an object relational mapping between them. We don't have to worry about the underpinning SQL anymore. We just need to worry about the actual logical model. So that makes life a lot easier for all of us, including you. 64-bit VMs. In the last release, we formally supported Linux and Solaris on 64-bit. Any of you that tried running those VMs probably knew that that support was an interesting question. It worked, sort of, kind of, if you squinted at it hard enough. In this release, those VMs actually work. And the 64-bit Windows VM is top of our list as far as things to support in the next cycle, because while Windows has not been moving that fast towards 64-bit, that train seems to be picking up a lot of steam. Just on the Intel side in general, Apple, for instance, has moved very strongly into 64-bit. Microsoft is finally moving very strongly into 64-bit. Looks like that's a place that everybody needs to go, and we're going there next. All right. Atomic loading. This means that if you load from Store, things load much more cleanly. Delays. This was something that a couple of our customers were really keen on. If you look at the way delays were implemented in the past, they weren't implemented using native facilities. We now have an underlying library that uses native timers on a number of our platforms Although you don't need to use native timers, you can default back to the Smalltalk level if you don't want to use native timers. The native timers have both pros and cons to them. The pro is that you're using the native resolution of your platform, which on a platform like Windows is quite good. If you're using Vista or Windows 7, you get very good timer resolution. On the other hand, there are some limits because you're using platform facilities. There are limits to how many of those timers you can create. Most applications would never hit those limits. If you're doing some stuff like some of our manufacturing customers use, you might actually run into them. You can always default back to non-native ones for things that don't need that level of resolution, though. So you can kind of mix and match and use to your best advantage what you need to use. The point, though, here is that we've got some good functionality if you need it. On the Macintosh side, we finally got native file dialogs, native print dialogs, a much more stable VM. I now happily use VisualWorks on the Mac. In the prior release, 7.5, for instance, I was mostly running Parallels to use the Windows VM because the Windows VM was way better. It is now caught up. It is almost as fast as the Windows one. Also, if you're using that platform, we have an Objective-C runtime, which gives you some cool capabilities as far as integrating with the Mac. I should mention at this point, it'll be on a later slide, but one of the nicest things doesn't have anything to do with the Mac at all. It has to do with Windows, and that is that for years and years, one thing that's been missing from VisualWorks, it's been in Object Studio since time began, but it has not been in VisualWorks, has been the ability to integrate ActiveX components. You can now do that in VisualWorks. So if you have a reporting tool like Crystal Reports, if you have an HTML control, I mean, no sane person wants to write an HTML control in any language, much less Smalltalk. So if you want to embed one of those things in your application in order to get functionality that somebody else has sweated all those details, you can now do that. I was demonstrating the QuickTime player earlier today. You can embed Windows Media Player. Anything that's got that's an ActiveX control can be embedded in VisualWorks, just like it's always been embeddable in Object Studio and other Windows platforms. Down here, new prerequisite engine. This is actually kind of cool. Later on when I bring up VisualWorks, I'll show you this. In the past, it was a very manual procedure to go and add prerequisites to your packages. It's now much more visual and easier to understand and see what's going on. And that kind of pseudo-divide between development and deployment that you saw in the tools before is gone. It's one very easy-to-see format. I'll show you that in a little while. Over here, this says CSide 2.9, but the CSide folks jumped ahead and decided to call it 3. In 7.7 and Object Studio 8.2, the version of CSide that is shipping is 3.0, I think it's Alpha 5. So it is the last alpha that was available in, I think it was late November, before we kind of froze everything down. So if you're using CSide in VisualWorks or Object Studio, you get that. The next release of WebVelocity will be using the shipping version, you know, fingers crossed, assuming they get that far, of CSide 3, if not whatever iteration of that alpha they're up to or beta. A lot of perseverance of engineering effort went into this, a lot of ARs, you see the way that's stepped up. One of the things we really focused on in this release was trying to clear out an awful lot of the things the customers have wanted. When I mentioned delays a few minutes ago, when I mentioned improvements to store, these are things people have been screaming about for a very long time. We tried to get a lot of that stuff cleaned up, which does not mean that all bugs have been cleared. Our AR tracking system, I think its current numbering system is up in 50,000 somewhere. And believe me when I tell you that there are a large number of those that are not closed. But we did a lot of work this release cycle, cleaning out a lot of high priority things that have been sitting around. One of the other things we did for these products, and this, while you don't get this box, this is something that Jeremy, our marketing person, put together. These are graphics. So you don't get this box when we ship you the product. But we did get a lot of new graphics for the product. Jeremy, for instance, created a bunch of them for Object Studio. So if you open up the modeling and mapping tool, you'll see a lot of his work. We also worked with an outside party for a lot of the other icons. So you can see some really nice, crisp, clean stuff on the product. So a lot of that stuff came in. Let's skip past this. Most of you know what all this stuff here. Unit testing, I should mention briefly. In this release, one of the units, we've moved to a slightly different unit testing framework. We have something we call SUnit 2 instead of SUnit. Part of this is because Travis Griggs, our lead tools guy, has decided that he wanted something that integrated more natively with VisualWorks functionality so that when we embedded stuff in the browser, so that you had integrated testing right there in your package management system, so that when you were looking at it, you could tell how many tests had passed, how many had failed, you could debug immediately, you could look at all those results. He wanted to integrate much more cleanly into the system without having to worry about whether his changes would impact the wider community of SUnit users. So while SUnit still works, and lots of people still use it. We have something called S-Unit 2, which is kind of upwardly compatible with S-Unit. You can mix and match these two things. They work fairly well together. But I should mention that it's there, and there are tools for that. Platforms. A couple of things we dropped. We dropped the WinCE platform because Windows has since moved to Windows Mobile. We thought it's not really that useful to support a legacy mobile platform. You know, these things move even faster than desktop platforms. But we do support all the major platforms, 64-bit VMs on the Linux x86 and on Solaris. We're getting there on Windows and probably on the Mac eventually as well. A lot of interesting work over here. Cairo Graphics, I should mention that down there at the bottom if you go to the right. This is a new graphics framework for us, and it is heavily standards agreement-based out in the wider community. The Mozilla Foundation, for instance, has decided to use it as the core foundation for graphics in Firefox. So if you're using Firefox, I think it's 3.6 and up. They're using Cairo Graphics as their basic graphics framework. That means that we have decided to use something that is being used by not just Smalltalkers. So again, stepping out of that kind of hermetically sealed box that Smalltalk has often felt kind of constrained to, we're trying to use things that are out in the wider community. When you install VisualWorks, you will get the Cairo Graphics libraries for either Windows or Mac. I believe also, I think Linux also, but I'm not entirely certain about that. But you at least get Windows and Mac, depending on which platform you're installing on. And you don't need to go out to the community and dig around and find the Cairo Graphics libraries for your platform. When I was installing them for the Mac, for instance, it was kind of an adventure. If you're not really an expert, you can get the wrong thing installed easily. We handle that for you. So you'll get all that stuff right out of the box.
And now, a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. One of the most important aspects of software development is isolation. We use many different forms of isolation. Labels in an assembly language program isolate jump targets from the jump instructions so that additional code can be added without having to fix all of the jumps. Subroutines isolate common operations. Local variables have an isolated scope. Classes isolate data and operations from other data and operations. Usually, when we isolate one component of software development from another, the system becomes easier to develop. The impact of changes becomes easier to analyze, and it makes it possible to have some confidence that a change will only have the effect the developer wants it to have. In fact, I would say it's isolation that makes software development possible. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
Databases, we updated the support. We now have support for all those things over there on the right. MySQL and E2 are fully supported. There's also a connection for SQLite, which while it's not fully supported, it will be supported in the next release because it's part of Web Velocity. If you start Web Velocity, the personal repository you get is a SQLite repository. One of the nice things about it is that it's lightweight. You can create store repositories like that with it. I've actually got a screencast out there that shows you how to do it. It is not the most obvious thing because you have to walk through at least one exception. That's because it's not fully supported in this release. But it's really neat for doing personal repository stuff because it sets up with no fuss, no muss, and it's just a file in your system and you can move it around easily. But we support all the majors, so you know all that stuff. We support the latest releases of all of those. And support Internet Protocol, C Library Interface, all that stuff. VisualWorks 7.7, I mentioned this earlier, CLDR. So we went from 14 locales, that was the handful I mentioned earlier, to hundreds. We're on Unicode as a standard, and we are moving forward with CLDR in the future to do a lot more work. I think we did a podcast a while ago with one of our engineers, Les Coyman. If you go back to our archives, you can find it. And we discussed with him all the work that had gone into this CLDR and Unicode work. And it's kind of like what I often say about my own knowledge of audio processing. The more you know about it, the more you know that you don't know. That's really where internationalization CLDR work is that as soon as you dig into it, you find that it's this massive mountain of stuff, and you have to decide which is the most important part that our customers really need, and that's what we're digging into now. So we will be getting to a lot of stuff that you'll be able to take great advantage of. Com revamp and ActiveX. The com stuff is really nice. There's a really nice tool that came in the last release that I will show you browse automation classes. I showed this for those of you who were there earlier today. I showed that tool briefly this afternoon. Really nice tool. Allows you to look at all the APIs for the extant COM instances that are on your system, as opposed to having to trawl through MSDN documentation or third-party documentation that's for something like the QuickTime player or iTunes or some other library. You don't have to go to that vendor and see if they've got documentation that's been written in the last century. You can get it immediately just by reflecting on what's actually on your system. It's a really cool thing. The ActiveX support, I was demoing that earlier today. New product logo, new tool enhancements, a lot of new stuff. The icons, again, total refresh for both Object Studio and VisualWorks. The icon set's all new. It makes the product look a whole lot nicer. I think everybody can agree that that's a nice thing to have. And again, Cairo Graphics, this is in preview for this release. It gives you a better graphics framework, one that's used by a lot more people than just small talkers, and gives you a way to produce nice looking graphics. Now, I will mention something that Travis has told me more than once. Do not expect Cairo Graphics to be faster than the standard Smalltalk graphics. Expect them to look nicer, though. Expect to be able to produce things that aren't jaggy. Expect to be able to pump out PDFs. Expect to be able to pump out stuff that looks really professional. But don't expect it to be, you know, astonishingly fast compared to what you have now. Just expect it to be a whole lot nicer. Polycephaly. Arden likes to say that this is what happens when you let your engineers name something. Polycephaly is a preview tool. It is not fully supported in this release. What this is an exploratory approach we have to supporting multi-threaded and multi-core. If you get any machine, this is a 2007 era machine, it's dual core. Any modern machine you get is going to have at least two cores, probably four, maybe six, eight more. So it's very nice to be able to support having multiple images communicate in a reasonable and rational way. What we're doing with multi-threaded multi-core support is not trying to multi-thread the VM at the level of having each Smalltalk thread be an OS thread. That, as far as we're concerned, is not the right way to go. It is to allow you to spawn multiple Smalltalk images and have them interoperate in a way that they can solve some problem together and in a way that makes it easy for you to get all that started and coordinated. Right now, anybody could do that. You could use OpenTalk to design that yourself, but getting those all to coordinate and communicate is not trivial. It's not that you couldn't do it. It's that you probably don't really want to spend the time and effort. What we're trying to do is make it so that you don't have to spend the time and effort out of the box. You'll be able to push all that stuff together. There's some preview componentry you can take a look at. There's a demonstration from, I think it was last year's ESUG on this, so you can take a look for the video on that. Object Studio. And before I move on to Object Studio, does anybody have any questions on what I just talked about with VisualWorks? Again, Windows-centric, Vista certified, and this slide should be updated, Windows 7 certified, only one on the market that is such. It is a developer's tool for mapping things simply. So the idea here is that you can build things that map to databases, you can model very easily. The modeling and mapping tool are not as integrated yet as we intend to make them. That's a correct statement right now, Andreas. Originally, these tools were intended to work together so that you model a system and then have your model push out a database model, and then from that you'd be able to map all that back into objects. We're not 100% there yet. We have a tool that the mapping tool will allow you to map things back and forth through a database. It uses the active record pattern if that's what you want it to use. It's using GLORP as its mapping layer so that you have the full power of an object relational mapping system, so that you can walk outside of Active Record, so you're not restricted to what, say, Ruby on Rails is, where you go very fast as long as you're on the rails. As soon as you leave the rails, you're kind of on your own. With this, you can leave the rails if you feel like. If you don't need to leave the rails, you continue to move pretty fast. The nice thing about this is that this is not the only place we're using this stuff. GLORP is used across the product. It's underneath Store. It's underneath our mapping tool. It'll be being integrated more with the modeling tool through the mapping tool. And it's used in Web Velocity. So all of these things are moving together very rapidly because we're putting that same underpinning under everything. And it means rather than just this one tool move forward slowly because it's one engineer chugging away at it, it's lots of people benefiting from that common work. So the modeling tool here, Roundtrip Engineering, gives you a whole bunch of legacy database connectivity, even mainframe connectivity you can get out of some of this stuff. If you go back to Object Studio, you can do eHelopy and APPC if those terms mean anything to you. If they do, I feel sorry for you. Fortunately, they don't mean much to me. But we do connect to all that stuff, and I know that many of you do have to communicate with that. So as much fun as I have liking to say that kind of thing, in all seriousness, many people do still have to communicate with mainframes, and this tool has the capability to do all that. The mapping tool, this again, object relational mapping, I mentioned that a couple moments ago. Again, active record support, full Glorp object relational support. And a whole lot of tool niceties, new product logo, lots of refinements, lots of bug fixes, and again, on top of the VisualWorks Foundation. So if you're using Object Studio, and you've always in the past said when you were using, say, Object Studio 6 or Object Studio 7, or even if you were further back then, you said, you know, lots of new stuff seems to be happening in VisualWorks, why don't I have any of that? Now you have that. You have all those things that have been being done for VisualWorks for years that you thought you'd never get. Now you've got all that. These are supported standards. Again, the database is looking an awful lot like the ones for VisualWorks because we're using the same foundation, so everything moves forward together. On the other side, a lot of this stuff looks different, though. We do have the same ActiveX and OCX support, but we have a lot of other things down here that do not appear on the VisualWorks side. Again, that mainframe connectivity that I mentioned. That stuff that you won't see in VisualWorks. I mean, you could write it, but why bother? You can get it right there in Object Studio. Anybody have any questions on Object Studio?
And now a short break for this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. J.P. Morgan Chase is hiring again, and there are at least 4 new positions available worldwide. Hong Kong. J.P. Morgan Chase has positions available for a senior software developer and a software developer who have experience with OO programming. It is considered a plus if you have experience with Smalltalk, relational databases like Sybase and Oracle, and if you have good knowledge of the credit and rates business, FX and interest rate products such as swaps, options, futures, and securities. Mumbai, India. J.P. Morgan Chase is looking for an IB Tech Application Support Analyst Associate who has experience with Linux system administration, new server configuration, debugging skills, Unix, network storage solutions, network communications, Solaris system administration, Gemstone, and shell scripts. It is considered a plus if you have experience with Samba administration, Gemstone DBA, Citrix administration, and Smalltalk. Mumbai, India. J.P. Morgan Chase is looking for a capital operator, L1, who has experience with Unix, shell scripts, has excellent communication skills, and experience with OO programming. It is considered a plus if you have experience with banking or financial services, Smalltalk, and an understanding of the rates, credit, hybrids, flow businesses. The jobs listed in this report are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs, or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
Okay, web velocity. Last one in our little lineup. This is a new tool that we built over the last couple of years. This is a web development framework. It's built on top of Seaside in VisualWorks. So those of you who are, how many of you are familiar with Seaside, I should ask? All right, so at least this side of the room over here knows what Seaside is. Seaside is a, but just to give you a brief, if you're not that familiar with Seaside, most of you have built client GUIs. And if you built a client GUI, then you have something of a notion of how a GUI is put together for the web using Seaside. Seaside, instead of being a page-based metaphor for putting together applications, is more of a GUI-style building where you put together GUI components, only they're HTML components, and you wire those together using code. With Web Velocity, we tried to take it up from that basic level. If you remember back in the early 90s, one of the things a lot of tool vendors were saying was, you know, real men don't use GUI builders. Well, kind of the same metaphor goes out across in web work. A lot of people still think that real men don't use the moral equivalent of GUI builders for web development. Web Velocity is trying to change that the same way the GUI builders back in the early 90s were, by saying, you know, who wants to be stuck down there in the muck pumping out little bits of HTML and div tags? Why not build components and say, this guy knows how to push out an RSS feed. This guy knows how to push out a grid. This guy knows how to push out a database, this list of database things that I've got lying around in my database. And then I can put them all together and have them interoperate We're shipping a bunch of examples with this so that if you don't know how to use Web Velocity in Seaside, that's there. On our website, there's a bunch of videos on this. I do screencasts on these on a regular basis. So you can take a look at our video library and then get the code examples from the actual product itself so that if the videos aren't enough, you can trawl through the code and see, okay, how do I build a blog server with this? How do I build a photo library displayer with this? How do I build something that integrates with Google Maps? Because one of the examples is showing how would I integrate with some web APIs that are extant. Well, take the Google Map API, take some Seaside, put it together. We've got an example that shows you how to cut and paste that stuff together. And it's all got a bunch of JavaScript libraries built into it. We support MooTools, we support Scriptaculous, and in the next release we will be supporting jQuery. So integrated unit testing is part of this. The Active Record pattern is part of this. We support relational databases under the hood. We support all the same ones that you saw on the list for Object Studio and VisualWorks, so all those databases. For the personal store repository, it's using SQLite. There's no setup. If you're familiar with VisualWorks and Object Studio and you've ever set up a store repository, you know that while it's not terribly hard, it does require a few steps. No steps. You set up Web Velocity, bam, you've got a repository. Also, like Object Studio and unfortunately, unlike VisualWorks, when you install either Web Velocity on Windows or Web Velocity on Windows, Mac, or Linux, they both install the right way. They put the code in the program directory structure for your platform, and then they put a working directory where the working directory belongs. You know, VisualWorks doesn't really do that yet. It should, but it doesn't. Object Studio and Web Velocity both do the right thing. Out of the box, they're both ready to go. Also, Web Velocity is one other thing that is unlike Object Studio and VisualWorks, and that is that the working metaphor, the way you work with this product, is a little different. If you're working with VisualWorks and Object Studio 8, although Andreas, probably Object Studio 7 and before, this might have been more like it, where you were always intended to be a clean slate start. But if you're working with Object Studio 8 and VisualWorks, you typically load a bunch of stuff in, save your image, and then work from that saved image until the next time you get a production image to work with. And that's kind of the metaphor you work with. I certainly do this for bottom feeder in my blog server. I have an image I work with, and then when I finally break it, I build a new one. Web Velocity, you don't save the image. Typically, it's the way you do things in most other languages. Create a project, version your project in your repository, quit, then when you start up again, you load again. So it's clean. You always start from a clean slate, which means you always start from a known starting point. This also means that deploying a Web Velocity application compared to deploying Smalltalk applications in the past for us is child's play. To deploy a Web Velocity application, you go to your server, you drop your image and VM in there, and then you just have a directory for which it's going to load its packages, and you have that, it's just a known directory name. You drop your packages in there and start it. And then you just go to your web server, whether it's Tomcat or Apache or IIS, whatever it is, do the configuration at the web server level to do the proxy pass, reverse, you know, to tap it forward, you know, request to come into this URL, come in for this port, forward it over there, and then you're done. So it's very easy to set up. And that's pretty much all I needed and wanted to say about these products. That should cover all the stuff that's new in these products. I'd like to thank Arden Thomas, our product manager, for these slides. This is actually his presentation. He was going home to be with his family for a night before we had to go to Baltimore. We begrudge him his time with his family. Just kidding. But, you know, that's why I'm here giving this presentation. So thank you, and thanks, Arden, for the slides. And I'll take any questions.
Web Velocity, are you positioning it just for new application development, or are you looking at any paths for someone that has like an existing Seaside app, a VisualWorks Seaside app, and they want to now, you know, maintain it as a browser-based development tool environment? Is there any encouragement to consider that as a migration business?
If you're an existing customer, we're certainly happy to have you look at moving that up to Web Velocity, yes.
Okay.
Because if you were working with...
Well, because the path was... I went through that. That's what I mean. Like, it was a bumpy path to get through that. I'm just wondering how... I don't want to say supported because it's all doable, but how encouraged that is. Or is your marketing focus for the Web Velocity more the clean slate development?
I'd say that for the most part, what we were initially interested in was getting new people to come into Smalltalk and take a look at it because it's, like I said, it's a simpler install, it's a simpler deployment by a lot, and we've tried to focus on high-level development where you don't have to go in and dig and do a whole lot of development. You can get something simple running very quickly, and if you're willing to live with the basic scaffolding of themes, it'll come out of the box almost without trying. It's only when you have to go in and say, okay, I have a CSS designer over here, he's going to build my look for me, and then I'm going to customize this so that I get these graphics, I get these other things, then you have to do a little more work. But it was targeted at bringing newcomers in. Certainly we're interested in having anybody who's an existing customer move up to it.
And on that one, I wouldn't even say with moving up or moving over to it. We do have some of our existing customers who are looking to web-enable their current applications. And there's not really a migration path, a simple migration path from there. However, with everything that we did for WebVelocity, we also have those same capabilities within Object Studio and VisualWorks. So without having to move everything to WebVelocity, they have the capabilities in, you know, currently existing in their Object Studio application or in their existing VisualWorks application, or not existing, but the newer versions. So they can do that, so they really don't have to migrate or jump through the steps into WebVelocity. But as Jim was saying, the real market for WebVelocity is new. You know, making it a simpler, cleaner, easier small talk for people to step into and try out. Something we've heard from a lot of our existing Smalltalk customers is, give me a copy of WebVelocity because the Java guy or the Ruby guy, he'll be able to figure this out. He'll be able to get this and we'll start speaking and using the same language. So that's a lot of what we've so far heard with WebVelocity. And that was our goal. So, good.
Now, I bring something up under Windows, but I didn't start VM before I started. And periodically, when I start a VM, it's kind of a crapshoot as to whether it starts fast or whether it decides to ponder its navel. So rather than have you watch my machine ponder its navel, I'll just bring this up. Because from the standpoint of the refreshed icons, it doesn't really matter whether we're looking at it on the Mac or Windows or Linux that we're having. Notice up here, all these icons are new. So they look different. The product looks more crisp. And I mentioned something about the store tool. I brought up a working image I have at the bottom, Peter, simply because this is probably the easiest way to show you this. I have a package here that has a whole bunch of prerequisites. And you notice that down here, all these are listed as missing. And the reason they're missing is because I have a working bundle here, and I have all my prerequisites up at the bundle level. I haven't bothered them in the internal, because my notion here is I always look at the bundle. I never worry about the individual packages. But this is interestingly illustrated because it shows you, here are your current prereqs, and obviously I have none, and here are the missing ones that the system was able to identify on its own. This is what this guy depends on, so either you better have some other way of loading these, or you better change these. And the way to change this is just drag and drop. You drag these things in. So you move these things, you move these up in here, okay? So you just drag and drop them in, and you can use the buttons to get more visuals out of that. But that's the way we changed this. If you remember the old way, in the old version of the product, it was much more textual and much more manually intensive. This makes it a little easier to visualize what's going on. So that's kind of one thing I wanted to point out about one of the nice facelifts to the tool is not only the new icons, but a whole bunch of little touches like this. And since this browser is shared between Object Studio and VisualWorks, this touch is shared between those two products.
Is there any pricing information about VisualVelocity? I understand it's kind of a free demo phase now.
It's sold right now under the same license terms that VisualWorks and Object Studio are sold under. What you have from the web is you can download an evaluation copy.
Right.
So it's not, we're not calling it a non-commercial, but it's sort of akin to the non-commercial in that you're not, that version is not intended for commercial deployment, but it's sold under the same terms as VisualWorks and Object Studio.
So you can sort of tinker at your leisure.
Right. If you decided to deploy something that was going to be a commercial venture, yes.
Is that similar? Do you have any kind of information about the cost of deploying?
I'm going to punt that question to Suzanne.
Or me.
Or him.
Actually, Doug, he's sales. I can punt it to Doug.
Yeah. Generally, what I do, rather than... one reason we don't put this information on the website is because we have a lot of different models. We have a systems integrator model. If you're going to go out and build an application for a customer that they will eventually become a Smalltalk customer. And we have this model where we actually compensate you as the systems integrator to do that work. We have the value-added remarketer model, which I've trained on, where you can embed Smalltalk or Black Box inside your application, and we have different ways to handle that, but it's primarily a royalty model. Then we have our direct licenses, where you're going to get the software and use it in-house. And then we have two different models there, whether you're going to deploy it on a thick client, fat client, and then we do it by end user, or if it's going to run on the server, and then we do it by the number of CPUs or the server farm. So, and a combination of all of those.
Sure.
So that's where it gets kind of complicated. Generally, in a 10 or so minute conversation, and I talk with someone, I can drill down exactly what they need and say, this is what it's going
to be. So it's a case-by-case basis.
It can be. There's general rules, but what I have found, without that 10-minute conversation, someone may get the total wrong impression, either high or low, and
yeah.
go off misinformed.
So before you get to that stage where you're certain you've got something that
yes.
you're going to make a business out of,
yes.
it sounds like you're offering sort of free deployment. If somebody wanted to make a website or a light application, they could do it for free.
With Web Velocity, there are some limitations with Web Velocity. So with Web Velocity, you can get involved, start working with it, develop with it, and then there are some limitations when it gets to the number of objects and classes.
There's some technical limits built into it to prevent you from building the world's most scalable application.
Yeah, or like a domain name. You're probably not, you know, probably can't go buy a domain name from, I don't know, GoDaddy and then automatically connect it to your free.
Technologically, there's no limitation to that for license limitation. I mean, you can get a domain from GoDaddy and then find yourself a BBS and deploy that. But if it's going to be deployed for commercial purposes, as Doug was just saying, you need to contact us and buy a license.
Right, it just sounds like there's a lot of scope for people to experiment at no expense to deploy it automatically, basically. That sounds interesting.
Deploying it would not be difficult. As a matter of fact, if you go to my personal blog, I outline how I deployed my new blog on a BPS. It's not hard, but it does require you to have some knowledge of how to work with, say, Apache.
So, I thought you kind of did that. That was kind of the thing with Web Velocity, is that it was sort of automatic.
Well, no, Web Velocity still runs on port. So, I mean, if you're happy with Earl, it looks like domain.com:8008 or 7777 or what have you, yeah,
right.
you can deploy it that way.
Right.
If you're okay with your URL having a port number in it, then sure, yeah. If you want it to not have a port number in it, you're going to need to do some work with your web server.
It sounds like a pretty good tool for people to try it out.
If you just wanted to try it out and get something deployed, like I've seen a bunch of people put up experimental servers just to make sure that it works and then take it back down, yeah. If you had a domain you could play with, you could put a server up, make sure it functioned, and then, you know, as long as you're not deploying it as a permanent commercial thing, you do that.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the industry misinterpretation of the podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the industry misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.